Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. For the past 46 years, the American Indian Film Institute has fostered understanding and appreciation of the culture, traditions, and issues of contemporary Native Americans. Today, we are kicking off Native American Heritage Month by discussing highlights from this year's festival, which features films about addiction, the Land Back movement, the epidemic of missing and murdered Indigenous youth in Thunder Bay, Ontario, Canada, and so much more. The festival runs November 5th to the 13th. It is usually in person and in San Francisco, but like most festivals these days, all films are available to watch online. You can find tickets at AIFISF.com or find a link at yourcallradio.org. Joining us now is Maitia Zavala, Executive Director of the American Indian Film Institute. Maitia is Navajo, Laguna Pueblo, Grand Ronde, and an enrolled member of the Fort Peck Sioux Tribe in Montana. Hi, Maitia. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Rose. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. Maitia, we've done shows about this festival, gosh, I don't know, for as long as I think I've been hosting. We used to have Michael on the show.
Yeah.
we miss him. And it really is an amazing festival. Just talk about what your experience has been like in putting this festival together.
Yeah, well, again, thank you for having me. Yeah, Michael was my dad, and I grew up in the festival. I was born a couple days after the 6th Annual Film Festival, and it's kind of a world that I was born into. I've seen thousands of documentary films, features. I've met, you know, so many people throughout my lifetime. I worked alongside my dad growing up. I just watched, I studied, and I listened to him. It's a first nature to me, you know. He taught me how to be a producer. And after his passing, it just kind of, it was a natural, organic process to, you know, move into and to keep his legacy alive.
What an amazing experience this must be for you, because so much is changing in terms of awareness raising about Native issues, about the true history of this country, about Canada. We're going to talk about one of the incredible films about what is happening with the devastating Indigenous young people who are being killed in Thunder Bay, Ontario, Canada. Mm-hmm. What has really struck you about the content of the films and just the amount of films that are coming out every year?
Well, you know, over the last, you know, 46 years, you know, we've seen so many, you know, incredible content that has come, and the difference that we've seen, you know, from the 70s until now is, you know, there are more people, Native people that are telling their own stories. You know, it's before it was a lot of, we had a lot of non-Native filmmakers telling our stories, but it's shifted. And we have, in, you know, some talented storytellers, talented writers, talented producers, media makers that, you know, that are telling their own stories. And it's, you know, from their historical, you know, historical events, you know, creation stories, you know, just from every link, you know, of them, they are producing these stories, and it's just, they're so heartfelt. They're so, I can't tell you how much emotion I had, you know, watching these films this year, how much, you know, sadness, how much laughter, how much, you know, dramatic feelings that I got, you know, just watching all of these. We had 160 entries this year, we have 126 films that were showing in the festival this year, and so it was a lot of emotion, you know, over the spring and summer when when they were being reviewed. And it's been a wonderful journey to see, you know, these films just evolve over the last 46 years until now. And it shows in our film catalog.
You know, you're so right, because two of the films that we're going to be talking about later in the show are pretty heavy. One is about addiction. Another, that's a feature film, but it was based on a very personal story of the filmmaker. And then the other film is about Indigenous youth who are taken from their reserves and sent to high school in Thunder Bay, which is in Ontario, Canada. And so tragically, seven Indigenous young people have been found in the river. And I just wonder, when you look at these films, a lot of these films are about, the celebration of Native people, you know, working to restore their cultures, languages. There's the land back movement. You've got a whole land back program. So how do you find a balance between the films about, you know, preservation and all the amazing work that's being done, and then the films that are about what so many are, you know, still really struggling with, whether it be addiction or massive, massive racism when it comes to these young people who are going to high school in Ontario Bay, or in Ontario, I should say, excuse me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, we try to catalog these films, you know, this year, for this virtual is, try to shed light on different subjects. With Tanya and Michelle's, spirit to soar. It's really important to shed light on what's happening. We have so many movements around, Indian country that are, you know, like you said, land back and, you know, water rights and fishing rights and et cetera. But, you know, there's still those unseen, unreported stories of racism that we feel are so important to share, you know, and this is, you know, very, very closely related to the missing and murdered Indigenous women. You know, it's just, a lot of our people are unseen. And so, you know, it's just a really important platform that we feel that we're doing to give our community that visibility and that light so that we can share our stories. And so we, you know, so the media will look at us, you know, and give us that time on prime time, you know. We feel we're doing our part, you know, to try to increase the visibility for our people.
Tell us a little bit more about the Land Back series.
Sure. Yeah. So, the Land Back, you know, we have a short collection of films that, you know, that really spoke, to us, in that, and it focuses on three different nations. One in the in Wisconsin, the other one that's the Passamaquoddy, and then the other one Winnowak Nation. But all three of them have been successful, you know, two of them have been successful in regaining their land back, you know, working with their communities, educating the neighboring communities around and, you know, sharing how important the land is to them, you know, and, you know, the resources, that the land has, you know, that is very beneficial for the tribe. And, you know, working together, one of the tribes, the Passamaquoddy, you know, received their land back. It is such a beautiful, beautiful story, you know, with prayer and, you know, with prayer and language. And it's called Our Land. Hashtag is Island Back in Passamaquoddy territory. And it's such a beautiful film. We have another one that kind of just, you know, profiles how a land was taken over, you know, the last century of how it was, you know, how the people were, the tribe was, community was treated, how they were just stripped slowly. And so, you know, this one is a portrait on, you know, the historical importance of the land and, you know, their triumph to get it back. And so, you know, it's kind of going from all different angles, but, you know, so important.
There are three films in the Land Back package, and because this festival is online, you can pre-order the films now and then watch them after November 4th. How long will these films be available for people who want to add some of these films to their schedules?
Yeah, so our festival runs November 5th to the 13th. And it's through Eventive, video on demand, very easy. Just, you know, purchase your packet, program packet for $12, and you can watch these incredible films and you know, support these Native filmmakers, you know, and our organization.
There's so many. We could talk to you for hours about all of these. The Water is Life film also sounds amazing. That's actually also another series, because there are a number of films under the Water is Life series. Can you tell us about that one?
Yeah. It's a beautiful tribute to the sacredness of water. It focuses on tribes that are, that live around water, the oceans, and the sacredness of the underwater life, you know, canoeing, getting, you know, prayer, canoes, wild sea life. It's just it takes from all different tribes around that just cherish the water, and it's beautiful. The respect for all things is such a beautiful film, which is the featured film on the landing page, just beautiful music, it's every film here is just gorgeous. So, you know, you won't be let down.
Well, Maitia, it really, huge congrats to you and your entire team, and huge thanks for putting this together, because all of these films look so amazing, and we love having you all on every year. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Rose.
Maitia Zavala is Executive Director of the American Indian Film Institute. The festival runs from November 5th to the 13th. All of the films are available to watch online. You can find a link at yourcallradio.org. Now we are going to highlight two of this year's featured films. I watched both of them last night and this morning. Really incredible films. First off, Brother I Cry follows the life of John, a young First Nations man trapped in a world of addiction and cultural displacement. Brother I Cry is nominated for the best film at this year's American Indian Film Fest. It was written, directed, and produced by Jesse Anthony. Jesse is a Haudenosaunee woman from the Onondaga Nation, Beaver Clan. She's a graduate of the Indigenous Independent Filmmaking Program and received her Bachelor of Motion Picture Arts degrees from Capilano University. Hi, Jesse. Thank you so much for joining us, and huge congratulations on your nomination. Really, it was an incredible film.
Sego Swagego, thank you so much.
Thank you. We are also discussing another amazing film. This is a documentary. Spirit to Soar investigates the story of seven First Nations high school students who died or went missing from 2000 to 2011. This is not widely known, but these young people leave their reserves and go to high school. in Ontario, Canada, in Thunder Bay. This incredible documentary was directed by Tanya Talega. It's based on her book, Seven Fallen Feathers. Tanya is an Ojibwe journalist and filmmaker. She's worked at the Toronto Star for more than 20 years and now runs the Makwa Creative, a production company focused on Indigenous storytelling. Tanya is host of the podcast Seven Truths. Hi, Tanya. Thank you so much for joining us again. And oh my gosh, what an amazing film. It was so incredible to learn more about you, the great work that you have done, and just to really elevate the voices of these young people. Thank you so much for joining us.
Bonjour. I'm thrilled to be here, and I'm so happy you got a chance to see the film and to hear our stories.
Well, it was an intense film, and I just, it's amazing that missing and unmurdered Indigenous women is finally getting attention. But to learn about these young people who are either missing or have been killed, I mean, I didn't even know that in Canada, what is now Canada, young people are actually taken from their reserves to attend high school. I didn't even know that was still happening.
Yeah, it's done in a different way now, right? Before it was the RCMP and Indian agents that would take our kids away and put them in church-run Indian residential schools up until 1996, I'd like to say. That's when the last school closed. But yeah, it happens in a different way. It happens now because of a lack of funding, lack of respect of the treaties that form the country we call Canada. So our children have no choice. If they want to attend high school, which is like the fundamental right of every other child living on Turtle Island, they have to fly 500 or 600 kilometers out of their communities. Most communities in Ontario's north are remote, so they're fly in or only accessed by winter ice road. And they have to go by themselves when they're 13, 14, 15 and go to high school in Thunder Bay or in Sioux Lookout or in Timmins or actually in other cities too across Canada.
Wow. So just to get a high school education, these children have no choice but to leave their homes, their language and their families. How many kids do this every year?
You know, honestly, thousands. Coming out, it's in the hundreds in Northern Ontario, but we're not the only region where this happens. I know this happens in Northern BC. I know it happens in Manitoba as well, and also in Saskatchewan. So when you add it all together, you'll see that it's actually quite a lot of our kids are forced to do this. And it's a hard thing. You know, you just said, and it's true, the kids, they leave their families. They leave their mom, their dads, their aunties, their cousins, their friends. And they also leave their language and everything they know. As for a lot of the kids, they speak Anishinaabewewin, they speak Cree, Ojibwe, or Ojibwe as their first languages. And they have to come into a city where everyone speaks English, first off. And there are things that they've never seen before, things like traffic lights and malls. So it's not, you can't assume that every child has been out of their community. I mean, lots do, but some have not been out of their community ever. So right. When they get to a city like Thunder Bay, it's completely exotic and totally foreign.
And then also what was so devastating is, obviously, it's not surprising, but to hear the young people in your film talk about the everyday racism that they endure, and even older people talk about the everyday racism they endure, it's just so heartbreaking to think that they're leaving their families. And as you say, they're in this loud city. And then on top of that, they have to deal with racism.
Oh, I know. It's so insidious in throughout Canada, I have to tell you. I'm sure Jesse would be able to tell you the same thing. There's a quiet racism that runs through this country of looking away. And, you know, when I say that it's a quiet racism, while it can be quiet, it can also be loud. And it can be loud in that vein of the fact that our children, you know, they walk down the street, they get off the bus, they get the sneers, they get the racial taunts. They're followed in malls, security guards follow them. I was in Thunder Bay last month, and my friend and I, actually the co-director Michelle DeRosier, were told to get off the sidewalk by some guy coming out of a coffee shop. Mm-hmm. It's all the time, and it's heartbreaking, and it's something that our peoples have been living with for, well, forever, it seems, on this continent. Since the settlers came anyway. But it's truly unfortunate for our kids. I mean, they don't deserve this, right? They deserve a chance like everybody else.
Jesse, what would you add to that, given that you were raised on the Six Nations of the Grand River Territory in Ontario, Canada?
Everything Tammy's saying is so true. And, you know, honestly, it's also the, I don't know if this is a reverse, but it's the, oh, well, you don't look Native. Oh, well, I never knew you were, I never thought you'd be Native. And having that conversation, because I'm fair skinned, light eyed, and then seeing the racism drop in, you know, then seeing the things change. I would say in the medical system is the one place that I'm really feeling it, and it's been a struggle. It's everywhere. And it's all spectrums. It can be in that small little, oh, I never thought you were Native, to outright, you're a Native, you know?
Hmm. You mentioned the medical system, and that a few scenes in your film, Brother, I Cry, where Leah... goes to, so she's pregnant, and we can talk more about the story, but since you brought up medical system, I was really struck by the scenes between Leah, a First Nations woman who is pregnant. Her interactions with the white nurse are really intense, and it's short, but it really kind of just hits you in the gut.
Yeah. You know, I always think budget, but it wasn't just budget. The idea around everything you see on the frame, you know, the type of room she's sitting in, you know, mm-hmm. Some people are like, well, that looks like, no, those are familiar spaces in remote communities, in mobile rooms, you know, in our communities where we don't have the money for certain facilities, or, you know, and then you have this doctor that comes in with this entitlement, and you also have this nurse that is afraid, you know. So these are just experiences that I've had when needing to be at the ER, when needing to, you know, be looked after in the medical system. So I hope that that comes off in the scene, and her reaction to it is to, you know, zone it out, I guess.
Right. Before we go to break, can you just tell us a little bit more about the film Brother, I Cry? As I said, it's about the life of John, a young First Nations man trapped in a world of addiction and cultural displacement. So tell us a little bit more about the film and its connection to you and you know, your experiences.
Absolutely. This film came to me in a dream. A certain angle of it came to me in a dream, but the whole script is written from experiences that I've either witnessed or have lived through. And it is for my brother in a plea of his safety. And I wanted to talk about functioning addicts, and I wanted to talk about a conversation around in a whole family enabling an addict and what it's like to love an addict. And, you know, that cycle, this vicious cycle that we can't get out of because of these stereotypes, because of these, because of this intergenerational trauma. So I'm connected to it because it is written from life experiences and for my brother. But for my community and I was hoping that it would be so specific that it was universal, because everybody knows a John, mm-hmm. Everybody loves a John. And that is what I hope, people can relate to. But also I wanted to start a conversation around talking about, you know, the opiate crisis and talking about what it does to a family and the ripple effects in the family. So the movie is, you know, it's these women surrounding this man and following his journey. He tries to do right. And, you know, I don't want to give too much away, but it is a heavy topic. It's a heavy film. And, you know, I just, it's a truth though. And I really needed to be in that raw truth of we need to do something that, you know, we need to talk about it. We need to do something. It's the only way that we can figure out how to take care of each other and celebrate each other and uphold each other in this difficult time.
You know, your film has received rave reviews. What are you hearing from, well, I want to say audience members. Are you able to now go out and actually interact with the audience? I know that that's starting up, but have you been able to do it?
I was lucky to get a half in-person screening when it first premiered in Vancouver. And then, sorry, I'm just on set.
Yeah, that's okay.
And then we were in Santa Fe and we got to have an in-person screening, but there was no Q&A or introduction. So it was a little strange. So hopefully, I don't know. I mean, we don't have a distributor, so we're not in theaters, and it just kind of is what it is wherever it goes.
Well, it really is an incredible film. The acting is amazing. We're talking about Brother, I Cry, which follows the life of John, a young First Nations man trapped in a world of addiction and cultural displacement. And we're speaking with the film's director and producer, Jesse Anthony. We're also talking about Spirit to Soar, an incredible documentary that investigates the story of seven First Nations high school students who died or went missing from 2000 to 2011. And in what is now Canada, First Nations children are taken from their reserves and then are sent to various high schools. In this case, they are sent to Thunder Bay, which is in Ontario, Canada. And they're just in this new world, a city and racism. And Tanya Talega does an amazing job of telling these stories. Tanya is an Ojibwe journalist and filmmaker. And this film is based on her book, Seven Fallen Feathers. These films will be shown at this year's American Indian Film Festival. It runs from November 5th to the 13th. All films are available to watch online. You can find tickets at yourcallradio.org. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we are talking about the 46th annual American Indian Film Festival, which usually takes place in San Francisco. This year, like many festivals, all of the films are available online from November 5th to the 13th. There are so many incredible films. I hope you can take the time to check out the website, share it with friends and family. You can find the link at yourcallradio.org. Today we are featuring two of the films. Brother, I Cry follows the life of John, a young First Nations man trapped in a world of addiction and cultural displacement. The film is nominated for Best Film at this year's American Indian Film Fest. It was written, directed, and produced by Jesse Anthony. Spirit to Soar is an incredible documentary that investigates the story of seven First Nations high school students who died or went missing from 2000 to 2011. They all left their reserves to attend high school in Thunder Bay, which is in Ontario, Canada. It was directed by Tanya Talega, which is based on her book, Seven Fallen Feathers. If you have any questions or comments for Jesse or Tanya, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. We'll talk more about both of your films, but I want to also ask you about the changes that we are seeing. There are so many more Indigenous-led TV shows with Indigenous casts. Well, I shouldn't say so many more, because I think we can still probably count them on our hands, especially when we're talking about, films or TV series that have been picked up. But are you both seeing things change when it comes to more representation of Indigenous and First Nations people? Tanya, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's changing, and it's great, but we need so much more of it. And where we need it to isn't just directing and in front of the camera and the story writing, but on the business side. That's where is one area that I see like a big gap still. I'm like desperate actually to find someone who can help me with the business end of it, because I find that the creating suffers in a way, because you're also the one trying to arrange the deals and figure everything out. I executive Spirit to Soar, so it was a lot, and I think that's an area that we really need to funnel some time and talent and money into, so we can get more Indigenous people behind the scenes and sort of in those decision-making chairs. That's where we need to be seen.
Well, that's such a good point, Tanya. I mean, and this film was done so well, but it does take money. It takes a full cast. Yeah. I mean, it's so time consuming. We do so many shows about films, and I always say we're so used to things just popping up. Like if you go to Netflix, you're just overwhelmed by the amount of content, but so much is put into, in your case, almost an hour documentary.
You know, it's totally true. And this film, like honestly, we shot it over 4 years.
Wow!
And when you look at that and how long it takes to actually shoot it, and you want to pay everyone and pay everyone correctly, but it's the people that, like, you know, when you look at how much you get made, or how much you get paid. I don't know, Jesse, what your experience is, but I think it probably works out to maybe 5 cents an hour. It's like really hardly anything. It's like you have to do it for the love of it, because we sure aren't making millions.
Jesse, what are your thoughts? What would you add?
I'm making 4 cents. Just kidding. No, I totally agree, Tanya. It's like, you know, I think that's one reason why I continued with my production company, Pass Through Productions, because I saw that gap too. Like, yes, I want to be, you know, my first passion is acting, and then I went into directing and writing. But after I shot Brother I Cry, I realized that there's a lot of production companies out there that, you know, are putting so much money towards movie of the weeks, you know, all of these different things. And then there are Indigenous production companies that are incorporating for their show, and that's it. There wasn't enough Indigenous production companies that could help, you know, produce indie projects or do these things. So I really, you know, saw that and was like, I want to help other people produce their projects as well. And, you know, I did really well with the web series that's now on APTN in Canada and Reverie TV in the States. And it's the first Indigenous queer love story written and directed by Mary Galloway. And we, you know, I was able to produce that out in 6 months to the broadcaster, which was a big turnaround during COVID. Yeah, but like to source the money. And I'm like, I'm a nerd. I really love doing this. And like, having these people come and have their stories told, even if it's their first film, to get them started. Mm-hmm. And so the Indigenous Screen Office has been a blessing in terms of mentorship. Yeah. So I was able to mentor two Indigenous female producers, emerging producers, to kind of get an idea. So I hope that can continue. But Tanya, you're absolutely right. Like, it's not just in front of the screen and writers and directors. It's business affairs. It's marketing. It's promotion. It's lawyers. It's all of that stuff. Yeah. So that the creative can create beautiful content that is up there with, you know, the best of them. And I hope that there's going to be more companies that, you know, do that. And I don't think that the representation is happening fast enough. It's slowly happening. They're still trying to put, you know, Indigenous showrunners with tens of 15 years of experience and trying to say, oh, well, you know, we'll let your show, we'll produce your show, but you need to do it with a cis white male who's got 5 years experience, but we know him. So that's, there you go. You know, and it's like, no, these people, we're capable. Mm-hmm. We are the ones capable of doing this. So, I can ramble on a long time about.
That sounds like we both could. Yeah.
We'll have to have tea.
I know. I think so. I'm going to drive to Six Nations and come visit you.
Well, I'm in Vancouver right now. So I'm actually shadowing a director on an MOW because it's one of those things to like, get your name in there to say, okay, I've shadowed with this company that does movie of the weeks every, like they're turning it around so quickly. And I'm going, thousands of dollars are going into these Hallmark and movie of the weeks. And like, what?
Yep.
It's so true because some of the things that they have on Netflix, you're thinking, they did 5 series on this?
I know.
That took so much money and it just looks so bad.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, we have a caller, so let's hear from Chris in San Francisco. Hi, Chris. Thanks for holding.
Oh, hello. I tuned into your show about 20 minutes ago, and I was listening to you talk about violence and racism towards Native Americans. And I grew up on a beautiful farm about 20, 30 minutes south of Red Lake Indian Reservation where the Ojibwe live. And there was a ton of racism in Bemidji, which is a local town that people go to shop. And there was one night, it was the 4th of July in the late 1970s. And it was about 3 or 4 in the morning. And a bunch of us teenagers were going to a cabin in the woods. And to get there, you have to travel on Highway 89 that goes straight up to Red Lake Indian Reservation. It's about 45 minutes to an hour, as I recall, from Bemidji to there. Anyway, it's Red Lake Indian Reservation for the Ojibwe is a sovereign nation. So if the police or FBI are chasing any member of the reservation, if they make it to the reservation line, the police cannot arrest them, nor can the FBI. So sometimes the cops would chase them, you know, up that road, and if they were able to make it to the res, they'd be free. Otherwise, they would be arrested. Well, it was late in the middle of the night, and we were driving on Highway 89, and it was a dark night, no stars, no moon. Not a soul was on the road, and all of a sudden, this car was going about 120 miles or more, and it was a death race. And they had their lights out, and there are 6 or 8 troopers that flew by us with all of their lights out on either side of us. And I'm like, oh my God, they're going to kill him, you know? And it was horrific, and none of us ever reported it to the cops because who are you going to tell if they're the ones that are murdering these people? And I've never told this story, and my heart breaks to them because I never know if they caught them and killed them. There was nothing in the news about it, and it was just horrific. That's my story.
Wow. Well, Chris, thank you. Thank you so much for calling. And so you're talking about the Red Lake Reservation, which is in northwestern Minnesota. What can we say? Heavy call. Tanya, while Chris was talking, I was thinking about the section of your film, A Spirit to Soar, which again is about 7 First Nations high school students who died or went missing from 2000 to 2011. And again, for listeners just tuning in, these are young people who leave their reserves to go to high school, in this case, to high school in Thunder Bay, Ontario, Canada. And what's so devastating about this is that there's no proper investigation when these kids go missing or when they are found dead, if they're found at all. And the Ontario Police Watchdog did a report and found that systemic racism exists in Thunder Bay Police Service. So do you want to talk more about that? And do you have any response to the story that Chris just told? And Chris, thank you again so much for calling in.
Yeah, that was an interesting moment there that we just had with Chris calling in and saying that. Yeah, Chris, you got to say something, you know, if you are, especially for a non-Indigenous person, I know it's hard, but you got to speak up. It's going to take political will to change what's happening here on Turtle Island. And I know it's hard, and you wonder, who do I say something to? But you complain. You know, you say that you saw this and that you're concerned. Maybe you don't complain to that police force. Maybe you go to somebody else, a government ministry in your state, and complain. I mean, say something. I mean, the thing is that we need all citizens of Turtle Island to stand up and say that this is not right. We experience racism. Our peoples experience racism all over this continent. As we all know, when Black Lives Matter happened, for example, with the death of George Floyd, that opened up a lot. And the time when he lost his life, at the end of May. So that was, what, 5 months into the year? In Canada, for instance, we had already had 8 Indigenous peoples die in altercations with police. You know, this violence is not something that is unheard of for us. We know about this in our communities. And, you know, you just referenced, thank you very much for talking about the report in Thunder Bay. So the Ministry of the Attorney General's office, there's someone that you can, voice your concerns to. The equivalent in your state. They looked at what was happening with the Thunder Bay Police Force and the fact that we have had so many people dying and not enough investigations. In fact, the investigations that were done with 4 of the 7 children that I profile in my book and also in the film have been reopened and reinvestigated by a brand new set of eyes. And we're waiting any day now for that report to come down because the entire police force was found guilty of systemic racism. You know, there's much, and this is just Thunder Bay, but there's also all of these small cities and towns and medium-sized and big cities and towns all over Turtle Island, and we see this type of violence.
You know, listening to Chris, I also was thinking about Jodie Porter, a reporter with the CBC, right, who's also in your film, and Jodie says, there's basically a story in Thunder Bay that if you die in the water, you deserve that kind of death. There doesn't need to be justice. That is the unique story of Thunder Bay. There's a sense in the town that you do not need to account for these deaths.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are heavy words, aren't they?
Very heavy.
Mm-hmm. But true, sadly.
Jesse, what would you say? I mean, that this is a very heavy call from Chris, and I'm guessing that a lot of people have similar stories.
Yeah. I mean, thank you for sharing. And I guess my concern also is to take care of yourself for what you have witnessed or what you know. But, you know, it is definitely telling somebody, putting it out there, and it's just so sad. It's gross. It's actually the word that all of it comes to my vocabulary is it's gross. And, you know, I just think of the injustice that comes along with that in terms of, you know, having to go through, if it does go to court, if it does get looked at, and then going through a system that is not in our favor, that's not set up for us to have a fair trial. You know, there was a young man in my community, John, who was shot for property. And it's like, the injustice is just so, like, it sparks more racism. When that happened, you could see the divide in the communities, all the comments on Facebook of he deserved it. It's what, you know, he shouldn't have been taking our property. Like, it is so scary. Well, but yet.
Please go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah. No. And I think that, you know, in terms of Brother I Cry, you know, his lifestyle is stealing vehicles. His lifestyle is quick cash. And so there's this danger side of it of, you know, of death. And it's unfair. I mean, and I don't know. Again, another topic I could ramble on about because it's painful. It's gross.
Well, and in the case of John in the film, and I think about so many young people, there's so much pain from, you know, not to give things away, but things he went through within his childhood, and he doesn't have outlets for that. And that's the case for so many young people, is they just need outlets. They need help, whether it's some kind of therapy or a class and sadly, John got this class in jail. I mean, that's where he actually ended up getting a little bit of help, which says a lot about the system. And it's just a theme for so many communities, Jesse, that people need some sort of outlet and help. And it is so hard to get. And in the case of First Nations people or Native people, it's so easy for the larger society to say, well, that happened a long time ago. It's time to move on. But it's just hard for people to understand how deep a lot of this is.
Yeah, it really is. It's a, you know, it's so rooted in the intergenerational trauma. I mean, I'm just coming to terms with the fact that I'm a day school survivor, you know, not a residential school survivor, but my mother was, but a day school survivor. And even that, and the way that I see the world and walk through the world. So, you know, if I look at somebody like my brother, who's in and out of jail, who has to deal with the system, you know, and now dealing with, you know, other systems like child welfare, it's, you see why people will run from it. It's not set up for us to have a fair trial. It's not set up because the people who are handling those don't come from where we come from in most cases.
Right.
And so, I mean, it's the media, it's how the media portrays us. It's, you know, people witnessing and not being allies or not knowing where or how to be allies. So, I don't think it's such a huge that's a huge topic and a huge conversation. And, you know, like I'm standing by a cop station and four cop cars have gone by. And every time they've gone by, I've gotten flustered because I'm like, am I supposed to stand on this corner? Am I going to get in trouble? Like it's ingrained, right? Like it's so ingrained in the body.
Right. Well, and Tanya, what would you add? Because what's so amazing about your journey in telling the stories of these young people is you first went to Thunder Bay to write a story about why First Nations people don't vote. And then the Grand Chief of the Anishinaabe Nation said, why aren't you writing a story about Jordan Wabas, a missing 15-year-old? And here you are. I mean, you've just done so much work to tell this story, and then in the process, figuring out who you are and why your family has become so disconnected from where you're from. Mm-hmm. And I'm really sorry to say this, but we only have about 2 minutes left. I didn't realize we're almost at the end of the show.
It's been a good discussion, eh? It's been and I'm totally grateful too that you've had us on too, and that that you've introduced me to Jesse.
Same.
We've got lots to talk about, Jesse. Oh my God.
I know. We gotta connect.
When you get back, let's definitely do the coffee thing. Yeah. Yeah.
Perfect.
You know, I'm still going, and I guess I took his advice to heart, but it took me, you know, a while to get that advice. I worked in mainstream media for a long time. I was a journalist at the Toronto Star. and before I started my own company, Makwa Creative, and just like Jesse, right, I did, you notice a gap and you're like, okay, well, I'm not going to just form a corporation to do a film and move on. Let's just form a corporation. Let's see how this goes. Yeah. And so I'm still telling the stories of our youth in Thunder Bay. And it's what I do as part of my storytelling, you know? And I feel grateful that I am able to do this. And I write books. I'm an author, actually, and that's kind of what also helps pay the bills. Mm-hmm. And it's we keep telling these stories. You know what? I always say that I wish I didn't have to write Seven Fallen Feathers, but I did. Mm-hmm. And I hope that we get to one day when our stories aren't always focusing on the racism and the trauma and the injustice. And we have so many beautiful stories to tell. And I know that one day things are going to improve. I do.
Hi.
Well, that is a great way to end. Thank you both so much for the work you do. And we would love to have you back. Tanya Talega is an Ojibwe journalist, filmmaker, and author. She's director and producer of Spirit to Soar. It's a documentary that investigates the story of seven First Nations high school students who left their reserves to go to high school to Thunder Bay, which is in Ontario, Canada. Seven of these students died or went missing from 2000 to 2011. This is based on Tanya's book, Seven Fallen Feathers. We've also been talking about the drama, Brother I Cry, which follows the life of John, a young First Nations man trapped in a world of addiction and cultural displacement. It was written, directed, and produced by Jesse Anthony, a Haudenosaunee woman from the Onondaga Nation Beaver Clan. And you can see Brother I Cry and Spirit to Soar at this year's American Indian Film Festival. It runs from November 5th to 13th. All of the films are available to watch online. You can find links at yourcallradio.org. Jesse and Tanya, thank you so much for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Chimigwich. Thank you.
Thank you. Find more information about the festival. Be sure to share links with your family and friends. So many incredible films will be shown from November 5th to the 13th. Again, find information at yourcallradio.org. Thanks to Leah Cesarine for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance and Joanne Marr for engineering our show. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.